Hello and welcome to I Want What She Has, your weekly antidote to the patriarchy. I am your host, Teresa Widman. Actually, I forgot the rest of my show snippet. I'm like trying to multitask here. Not only is the antidote to the patriarchy, but we are amplifying women's voices and their stories. Second Monday of the month, so I have special guest hostess Maria Elena Ferrar, who has been joining me since April, the second Monday of the month.
Yeah,
we've been cruising to talk about, meander in and out of conversations related to spirituality and politics. This is all kind of born of from a book that Maria Elena contributed to 10 years ago with the same title, Spiritualidad y Política. And so we've been talking about various things related to this. We are streaming on Facebook, on Radio Kingston's Facebook page. And we are going to be dipping into a subject on today's show related to gun culture and gun politics. Maria and Elena and I were talking about this a little offline a few weeks back and thought, actually, I read an article on NPR about July 4th and all of the gun violence and the gun deaths that happened over July 4th weekend. So I thought maybe it's a good time for us to talk about this. But for those of you who haven't tuned into a Monday before, I want to make sure that you know who Maria Elena is. She is the executive director of Humanamente, which is a diversity and inclusion consulting organization. And she is heavily involved in many happenings here in Hudson Valley, in the Hudson Valley and in Kingston. And she is also an artist and recently had a public art experience where she invited community members to come and engage in activity and conversation around the subject of the art of living together, which is really a theme from the book that Maria Elena contributed to 10 years ago. So, hi, Maria Elena.
Hi. You know, I keep listening to you and then I forget that I'm part of the show because I'm just listening to what you have to say. And I love it.
So,
how are you doing?
I am doing good.
Great.
I'm doing good. I'm in Wisconsin for a few more weeks, hanging out with the family.
And can I say hello, Wisconsin?
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't there that TV show, the 70s
yeah,
show?
The 70s show, yeah.
They would say that. That's funny. I forgot about that. That was a good show. It really did not seem like anything I had to do with Wisconsin, but it was still a good show.
Yeah.
So how did your art happenings go the past two weekends you did this?
Yeah, well, we had a little accident the past weekend. No, not this recent one, but two weekends ago. Well, because I started the conversation there at the shed of Habitat for Artists next to Artport in the Roundout. And it was great. It was great. We were having people. We started the conversation. You know, people feel like, okay, what's going on here? What are you selling? What can we do? Where is the art? You know, it's sort of like I always jump into those projects that are hard to define. And obviously, it's hard for people to get what this crazy woman is doing here. So, but it was great. The thing is that on Saturday morning, I was walking my little San Bernard, and he got crazy behind other dogs and dragged me down the street, and I hit my head against the pavement, and I couldn't open my eyes, so I couldn't go on Saturday. But there, you know, I still, you cannot, I have like 3 pounds of makeup here to go. But I can open my eyes. So this weekend was great, although I was wearing my sunglasses, even in the middle of the rain, you know, just to whatever. But it was great. And even yesterday, that was really, really raining hard at some point. We had people who stopped by to engage in the conversation. And I got tons of notes. And listen, this is just the beginning of the project. I knew when I committed to this that I had an idea and the project is gonna evolve by itself. And, you know, people is making contributions to it and let's see where it takes us. But listen, I got a bunch of different perspectives about what community is, you know, because we're talking about the art of living together, and I was giving people some prompts, some questions about that, you know, what is the purpose of a community, why we have communities, what we bring to the community, what we want the community to give us, how the community is structured, you know, who makes the decision, who is responsible for the community, and all those things. And listen, we basically needed to define community, and it was hard to find a consensus, like you can expect, because community is so, how can we say that? Brings so much different aspects of our lives together that it's hard for us to really come out with a concept that we all agree with. Although we didn't disagree, but we tend to go more towards one side or towards another. So I got great conversations. Even people just stopped by because we put on top of the shed, we had like a tarp to protect us from the sun and the rain. And I add those letters that say the art of living together. And, you know, people was passing by and like, you know, some people may want to ask, but they don't stop by just in case because they don't know what they are going into. And others came to ask what we were selling or what was that about. And then we have this woman that was very interesting because people came very open. You know, they really wanted to participate and find out. And we had very, very long conversation. But then there was this woman that she was passing by because she was going to the beach. That was on Saturday. There was a beautiful sunny day. And she stopped by sort of like, I don't know if to say upset, but definitely the art of living together triggered something on her. And she was on her bike. She came with the bike and come close and was like, why we have to live together? And it was like, that's a very good question. So do you want to join the conversation? And she was like, oh, how long is it going to be? You know, around 15 minutes, but I would love to talk to you. And she was like, I'm going to the beach. So quick, you know, like, whatever. I'm not going to miss the song for having this conversation. But then she started telling me stuff, you know, like the different ideals that we have that are ridiculous. We shouldn't be doing that. Why we have to live together? And, you know, she went go on and on and on. I couldn't take all the notes because she was like, really, you know, almost like da, 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 da. And I was like, wait, to the point that I was feeling bad. I didn't want her to lose her beach day. So I told her, do you mind if we connect somehow? Because I really want to continue having this conversation, but I know that you're going to the beach. And she nicely said, of course. So she gave me her contact number. We have to keep talking about that. And, you know, that was something also that called my attention. Pretty much everybody gave me their contact information because they understood, you know, after we were trying to understand the project, they understood that this was just the first step, that we may need to continue the conversation. And also then we need to start putting art together. And also we need to figure out where the installation is going to be and then what different shapes the project is going to take. So I have to say that my expectations were completely, not only satisfied, but way beyond, because people really engaged. And when we talk about community engagement, almost everybody's going to tell you, you know what is hard? To really engage with the community to actually do something. Because normally we do things for the community. We say that we want to build with the community, but it's hard because, you know, and even harder when you don't have a shared vision or a common goal or something like that. But I found that people really wanted to connect and think about what community is, because we take for granted that, you know, that we live in community, or yeah, everybody understands what a community is. But then when you talk about that and start making questions, then, you know, we are all, because also I was part of the conversation and I was also questioning my own preconceptions on that. So it was great. It was great. I would like to do it again. I'm going to see if the guys give me a little space again in August before they dismantle the shed. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. And it is an interesting subject to think about.
Yep.
For me, I have noticed for whatever reason that I pop in and out of a lot of different communities, in the sense that it doesn't feel comfortable. Once community becomes so defined that it's almost like it becomes its own, what's the word? Like it takes on a life force of its own. I mean, I've talked a little bit about this on the show, even last week, for example, when I was reading from this book, You Are Now Less Dumb. And the author talks about the things that happen to our brain when we join communities, basically, when we join groups of other people. So I definitely have like almost like a sensitivity to being too much tied into community, because I know probably from my own experiences and also just from what I've read and studied that the very act of being part of a community can affect how you see the world and the decisions that you make. So it is no longer your own independent, neutral thought process happening. So I can resonate with this woman who is in a way being concerned about community. But I don't know, have you thought about that at all in your own?
Well, I tend to think about too many things, and sometimes I just stop because, you know, if not, I'm going to get crazy. But the thing is that even before I can have a concept, you know, that I can articulate what a community is, I'm already starting from the point that there is no way that I cannot be part of a community, you know, no matter what. For much that I even tried or not to isolate myself and not relate to anybody, I found that impossible for our species. You know, we are gregarious animals. We are interdependent. We have a family or friends or at least another person that eventually we speak with, right? So it's really hard not belong to something that we could call community in a very broader sense. Yeah. You know, I love the ontology of the language and the meaning of the words and semantics. And when I think just in the word community, it brings me, you know, the idea of something in common or an activity that is a communion, right? So how we can be human beings without having something in common with another human being or with another living creature or with a landscape that we can still talking about a living creature out there. So it's hard. And I'm not saying impossible because I don't like dogmas, but you know, it is hard for me to think that we cannot be part of a community. If we think in a community in that characteristic or activity that brings commonalities among different individuals together, or even separate, but you know, we have commonalities. So I never thought about that. And also I've been always thinking like, yes, we are interdependent beings. So I don't like to depend on other, but I also understand that we are not completely independent. So that's why the interdependence. Is that the way it's say?
Yes.
Interdependent. Okay, very perfect. So it works fine for me, you know. Maybe sometimes we lean more towards one extreme or to the other, but yeah, I cannot see how we can cut that connection and continue being human.
Yeah, I mean, I will, with my concern about being overly influenced by a group or a community, that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, I don't appreciate community or I don't seek out community.
Yeah.
I do think that it's, for me, the I guess the frustration or the concern comes in when it's too limiting, right? And to be too locked into one community that may be limiting in a certain way or ostracizing, right? Like there are different types of communities. And once you proudly identify with one, that means that you are unaccepting of another. And what kind of harm is resultant of that type of mindset?
And I think that I agree with you, because then we are, as you pointed out, two different types of communities. So now we are going to the quality and the quantities of elements, and you know, how are the interactions in that, in such communities. Well, that's a different subject, or at least this is okay. This is another part, but community as a whole, it can be good, it can be bad, it can be like everything else, right? It depends on how we use it and the combination of elements and interactions that we have within that community. So when a community becomes so strict, as you mentioned, or that we get so overly influenced by them, and we cross the line to what some professionals talk about, the, you know, the group thinking, right? In that moment, you are just repeating what the group thinks. And it doesn't matter if you believe that or not. But the thing is that you repeat the thing. Eventually, you believe it, or you are afraid of not believing, or whatever it is. Well, then, yes, we need to start thinking about, well, is that the kind of community that I want to belong? And then, you know, I'm saying that I belong. So there is another component of community, the sense of belonging. And I had a beautiful conversation this weekend with a beautiful soul about how the sense of belonging was for her definitely what defines community. So it was beautiful.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think as humans, we are, for the most part, very social, right? We thrive off of that. I think that's why there is such a magnetic pull towards being part of a group. Because
it's
there
part of our nature. We want to belong. We need that sense of pertinency. Well, belonging, exactly. Yeah. You know, that you belong to something.
Yeah.
And I really think that also many of our mental health issues are triggered because that sense of belonging is not balanced. Or we definitely feel that we don't belong any place, or the places that I have around, or the groups that I have around, I cannot find those commonalities. I cannot find that connection, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, to me, at least, is another you know, reminder of how social we are, because, mm-hmm. you know, we are political animals. We are social animals. We need each other.
I feel like just sharing a few thoughts. We were listening to those community announcements there on the break and thinking about the community fridges and the mutual aid groups and things like that, that really show, really highlight to me like the best elements of community and how it can be so important to certain people's existence, to everyone thriving. And it actually, I was then thinking how, you know, being in Wisconsin, we had a bit of a situation at home, not a big deal, but the garbage was left on the porch because the woman who cleans our house, long story, couldn't get the garage open. And there's been a lot of bears getting into garbage. And I was like, oh, I don't really think I want garbage on the porch for a long period of time. And then I was thinking, like, who can we call? Because we live out in the middle of nowhere. Most of my friends are from the Kingston area. So to ask somebody to like drive out to the middle of nowhere to move garbage from the porch to the garage seemed like a big ask. And it started to make me think like, you know, who is my community and you know, what community members do I know that live out in the boondocks like I do? And I just give a shout out because I did reach out to Cal Patch, who is a pseudo neighbor. I mean, like neighbors out there, she lives like 2 miles down the road, but close enough. And her husband came and helped us out. So talk about, you know, community and neighborly helping.
You see, and now that you mentioned that, this beautiful soul that was telling me that that for her was important, that that connection, that openness, you know, from one another. It's needed for a community because otherwise you will feel that it's just group meetings, you know, or things like that. And she talked about a neighborhood, you know, because we tend to talk about, you know, our neighborhood is our community. And she told me a neighborhood is a neighborhood. That doesn't make it a community. It's a neighborhood.
Right.
And you know, it's true, but I completely agree with that too. But at the same time, look what happened to you. You know, it was a neighborhood. In your neighborhood, you find the solution. And, you know, at least there was that connection with your neighbor that makes you feel like, you know, the community is out there also to help each other, even if it's, you know, once every 20 years or whatever. But, right. you know, at some point, you know, we have that moment of communion because we are connecting with a goal. And, you know, in your case, you needed to solve that situation. And your neighbor was, you know, generous enough to help you with that. So to me, that's precisely what builds community. And community doesn't need to be like strong and every day. You know, it's sort of like a friendship. There are friends that maybe we don't talk to them in years, but then when you reunite again, it seems like it was just yesterday the last time that you spoke together. Because there is a connection that is there that doesn't depend on the frequency, but in the quality. So, and I guess that plays also, at least to me, a role in a community. What is the quality of the interactions and what are those commonalities that we share? And one of the questions, by the way, was, you know, what are your values and how your values align with the community, with whatever you are talking or you consider your community. And, you know, normally we don't think in those things, at least not completely consciously. And people were like, okay, let me think about that. You know, it's like, what are those values? Because then that, you know, then the attention goes to you. You need to know what are your values and then try to find out what are the values of your community and then see if they align. I know it's a lot of work. So And, you know, we're busy. We have life that keeps us, you know, very busy and distracted with things. So these moments are not frequent in our life to have those discussions.
Right. And that makes me think of, you know, I might be part of different communities because I have different values. So I have a community over here because we have a shared value. The communities that are based off of geographic boundaries are an interesting community to me because it may, when you have that kind of almost like neutral mm-hmm. boundary for a community that's not based on of a value, that maybe it's those types of communities that can help us bridge some of the divides that we might otherwise have and create by being in more value-based communities that are sometimes viewed as being in opposition to somebody else.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me to think about that.
Yeah, and that's part of the different, I'm not going to use categories, but the different kinds of the different natures of our communities, right? Yeah. We have geographical communities, we have familiar communities, we have our school community when we attend school, we have our friends community, even our parties community. We have, you know, when we want to go for a party, we have a specific group to do so.
Right.
But if we want to go to meditation, maybe it's a different group. You know, it is hard that you are going to be only with one community and satisfy all your social needs with that very same group, because then the community is becoming a cult.
Right.
And, you know, the group thinking is too strong. Well, yeah, we're not going to go that far yet. Not yet. But, you know, yeah, definitely. We invented, well, I don't know if we invented that, but we came up with a term yesterday that is like we are multi-communitarians, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if to say we belong, but we live and we interact and we grow and we contribute and receive from many, many communities at the same time, you know. And I also think that the primal community that we have in our lives is our family.
Right, right.
And you know, like it or not, and sometimes you say, well, we don't share the same values. I don't even feel that I belong to the family. Well, yeah, but at least, you know, I don't know if to call it the blood community or something like that, you know, but there are some sort of commonalities there too. And is there, you know, that's our first playground to know how to interact with the other communities that, you know, we are going to join and going to share and build and create, you know, along our lifetime.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a very rich conversation. I'm excited.
It is, and it's huge. And yeah, you know, and this is just one of the topics to define and to understand the community. We have like 20 more topics. So this project is going to be But, you know, I'm somebody that definitely, I mean, I guess that maybe you already noticed that I love to talk. I remember when I was in, I think it was in kinder, one day I arrived home, you know, I was devastated. I was crying like crazy. I was thinking that I was going to die soon because the teacher told me that she was going to cut my tongue. How could you tell that to how could you tell that to a five-year-old?
Yeah, that's inappropriate.
Exactly. That's another discussion. But the thing is that for me was like, you know, I think that my spirit resides on my tongue. How could you take it from me? You know, I really need to connect with people. And it's not only to speak, because also I learned that we have only one tongue, but we have two ears. So that means or you speak half of what you listen to, or you listen double of what you speak. And I found that like a very good rule for life. You know, when I join, by the way, when I join or I'm introduced to a new community, I observe I observe, I listen, I try to know people before I come to say something. And at the same time, when somebody is arriving to a community that I'm part of and this person comes like already deciding what needs to be done, it really gets under my skin, you know, because it's like, observe first, listen first, find out if this is the right place, if this is the right moment, and if your message is the right message at this time. You know, that doesn't hurt to do that. It's quick. And it comes again to the thing that we have 2 ears and only one tongue.
I love that image. That's a really important, it's an important lesson for me as well as others, for sure. So I love it. Community. What if people are listening and they have thoughts about community? Can they reach out to you? Are you still collecting information or is that chapter done?
No, the chapter is not done. And even if we move forward with different topics, I will continue revisit the community because this is the foundation of the thing, right? My project is a social practice or a community engagement art that wanted to, I don't have to say to end, but eventually produce an art installation in Kingston that can be, you know, itinerant, that can continue to grow, and that maybe will go and I don't know, to transform or develop in something else, right? Because, you know, I'm initiating these things and I have some ideas of what I want to do, but I'm completely open to what people is bringing because I really want that project to be a community project, right? So I see myself as the facilitator of that project, but I'm not the only one that is facilitating the project. And obviously I'm not going to be the only one authoring that project. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody's welcome to participate. We haven't come up with rules yet, but I'm assuming that as the conversation evolves, and we sort of like a create a community for this project, there will be some rules so everybody understand what is this about. But so far the rules are, we can have a conversation as far as you want to go. We can give you credit if you want to have your name there, or we can keep your contributions anonymous if you feel more so. For instance, I only did a few recordings of my conversations because people were like, and yeah, let's have the conversation first. Mm-hmm. But then they were happy to take pictures. And I asked, can I use your pictures also, not only for the documentation of the project, but eventually for the project itself? Because this project is also, or I envision it as an intermedial project. So that we will have different medias happening here. And also we can have eventually some performance around the installation if we can do so, right? Mm-hmm. So we will see. So if people want to connect with me because I'm very formal in some aspects of my life and not at all in others, so far what I'm using is my Instagram. That, by the way, I'm very new to Instagram. Each time that I want to post something in Instagram, I'm fighting with that app because why I cannot share this? You know, you cannot share something because it goes to your story and then disappears and then you don't see it. And it's too much. So anyway, but yes, through the Instagram, I'm trying to connect to that community for the project. It's marielena.ferrer in Instagram. And, you know, we can connect through that. Eventually, we can text, we can call, we can also use Facebook, we can meet in person. I'm going to continue the conversation that we started at Artport. This week, I have already like sort of like a 3 appointments. I don't know if to call them appointment, but with people that want to continue the conversation. And also I need to get back to some of the artists that are already thinking what they are going to create for this thing too. So it's becoming interesting. I don't know if I'm going to get overwhelmed. That for sure is going to happen. But yeah, please reach out. And even, you know, each time that we are here in the radio with you, it's an opportunity to connect. It's an opportunity to continue with the conversation, because I think that independent of the project itself, it's a conversation that I think everybody can be benefited from. So I'm the first one. Because, for instance, after talking about community and what makes a community and what are those values, we were also talking about the structure of the community. And then that's the politics of the community, right? How is the structure? Do we need leaders? And yesterday I had a very wise person in the discussion. And I believe that she is 5.5 years old. So her mom was telling me, we don't really need leaders. And the girl was saying, well, we can have leaders and followers, or we cannot. You know, she was like very like, you can or you cannot. Well, if we all know and share the values with the community and everybody knows what they need to do, I have two other people that were talking about only one community as the global community, you know, like a very horizontal picture where everybody knows who they are and what they have to do. Therefore, you don't need leaders. And it was like, well, that sounds good. But when we go to the, you know, interactions and assignments, who does what? So then we have to define roles, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about that in the show. Well, there are some roles, because if everybody is, let's say, planting potatoes, I mean, we're not going to be very healthy as a community, right? So mm-hmm. we may need people planting potatoes, others apples, others spinach, others maybe having some chickens if you want some eggs, and so forth and so on. So each one of us maybe have a different assignment. And, you know, this girl was like, yes, we have different assignments. That's good. So you don't need the leader for that, because you will know what is your assignment. And then I asked her, and what if somebody doesn't want to do the assignment that they have? And she said, well, you can trade it with somebody else. And it was like, that was quite a smart answer. She said, you can trade your assignment. You know, if you don't want to do this, you come here, maybe somebody trade it, exchange it with you. You know, problem solved. That's fine. And then I asked her, and what if you cannot trade it, or nobody wants to trade that assignment with you? And she took like a few seconds. She was really thinking seriously in the subject. And then she said, well, I guess that then we need to talk to the leader. And I was like, you're really wise.
Wow.
So we were talking about politics, you know, with a 5.5 years old. So don't tell me that it's not part of our natures to be political creatures, because definitely that was one of the subjects that we talked about. I think it was last program or the one before, when we were talking about the history, you know, like very briefly, what was the beginning of this? Why we need politics? Well, because we have different roles. We need to have also different ranks. We need to have different administrators of the public thing, of our public goods or wealth or whatever. And because sometimes we don't really know, I don't know to say how to behave, but how to interact in community. And we need to come up with rules. And sometimes you need a figure of authority to help in the, you know, management, in the administration of those rules. And then we go to power, obviously. Who has the power to do so? And is the power for, or is the power over? And then the conversation continues to be complicated. And, you know, to make that connection from community, from the leader, from the power to do things, or the power over others, is what I make the connection with the garden culture, right?
Why
we invented guns in the first place? For power. And it was the power, sometimes the power to do some things, But it became more and more, you know, an instrument for the power over others.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know the history of guns, right? I don't know exactly, which maybe that would have been a good thing to research before today's show, but we can we can talk about it again, or if anybody listening wants to chime in. But in thinking about a gun, right, like some people are feel very strongly that it is a protection tool. A lot of people have guns because it is a tool that they use for their protection. I would say the majority of individual humans that have guns use it for protection versus power over, to like obtain something that isn't theirs. That, and that's just me, but institutions like governments might have guns that it's questionable, right? Where is the line crossing? I can understand the impulse to have a gun as a form of protection, but when it's used as a tool to exercise power over somebody, power that isn't yours, right? Like you might say a parent has a power over their child. There's certain things that we've established as the appropriate power over somebody. But if you're exercising power over somebody inappropriately and using that tool of a weapon, of a gun, then it changes the dynamics of that weapon. But interesting to me was, and maybe this is unrelated, but I'll just pop it in here, was that article that I had shared with you about guns and play.
On the 4th of July, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, there was the before that.
The one before, yes.
Sorry, everyone who's listening. We've exchanged a couple of articles with one another, and we've been discussing them. And if anybody wants them, I will link to the both of them in the show notes for today.
Oh, great. But
there was an article that was written years ago. I'm not sure how long I could look at it, but it was about the play with guns, and basically justifying the play of using guns to play with for kids. But in that article, they talked about the history of the NRA and how the NRA, well, they talked about first about the history of this country and how there was trying to kind of set apart the way that guns have been used in this country compared to places like England and Canada. And why is there such a difference in the gun violence here in America as opposed to these other countries, because there's this whole philosophy that it's male aggression and the use of guns by aggressive males that makes it bad. So then it's like, well, do we socialize boys differently in Europe and in Canada than we do in the United States? And this author's theory was that guns are, there's this, the lore of the history of our country, which is that we basically became a country through the use of weapons, that it was the, you know, winning the West, and it was the gun that helped us do this, which I just want to point out. Then what we're actually saying is we used guns to steal the land of somebody else. I mean, that's actually what happened. And so that's why there's such a, you know, if you really think about it, that's why there's such, I guess, animosity around the founding of this country, because it's almost like we just accept it. I mean, if somebody were to come in here right today with weapons and take the land that I'm on, my parents' land, you better believe everyone would be up in arms. But we did that once upon a time. Can't go back and undo it, but that's part of the history. But this author's point was that it was actually a false history, that people weren't good at shooting guns, that the settlers, the colonists, the colonizers weren't actually good at shooting weapons. And so the NRA formed as an organization to help people be better at shooting guns.
At using the guns,
which kind of, I don't know why, that kind of blew my mind. I thought it was an interesting bit of information, if it's true. I haven't researched it beyond this person. But so I don't know the history of guns necessarily. I don't know who first made it, what its first use was. But to me, I see it being both justifiably in a way used as a form of protection. Although I don't like guns. I don't have a gun. I am such a peace loving hippie person that I wish all guns would be gone. So just sharing my biases openly in this conversation, but that's how I do see it, that it can be protection or it can be power over.
Yeah. And at the end, you know, it's what happened with pretty much everything. It depends on how you use those things, right? But we cannot deny that even though it depends on the use that we give to a tool or to an object, there are objects that are created for a specific thing, right? It's like, for instance, I remember in one workshop talking about symbols, right? We all are familiar with different symbols. And sometimes we are aware of how symbols work or not. But anyway, we have our interpretations of our daily symbols around. So, and I remember asking somebody, what a key, you know, just like the key of your house, what does those key represent for you? What is the symbol of a key for you? And this person told me to open doors. You know, that's what a key is for. And I respectfully disagree, because the key was created to lock the door, not to open it. So the purpose of a key is not to open. To me, the purpose of a key is to lock. Because if you want to open, you don't need the door in the first place, right?
Right, right, right.
That's another thing that we think, okay, about doors. What is the purpose of a door? To enter a space. Well, I respectfully disagree. It's to close that space. Because if you want it open, you don't need the door. So, and there are many things like that, that yes, definitely you have the opportunity to open it and close according to what is comfortable for you. And maybe we could do the same with the guns. It depends if you are using the gun to attack or to defend. But what we cannot deny is that it was not created to defend. It was created to shoot.
So, Maria Elena, I would like to ask you the question first to this subject of gun culture, about why it's an important topic for you, gun culture, gun politics, and whatever else related.
Well, we may need, well, we are not going to be so scholastic like to then let's define culture, but definitely culture is what shapes, you know, pretty much everything that we do in our human interactions, in our communities, right? And for instance, I remember once also hearing the analogy of a culture and how the culture plays in our lives. Like, for instance, with the image of a fish in a bowl. You know, you have the bowl fish, and the fish is there. The fish can see everything that is out of the bowl, right? But the fish cannot see exactly where the bowl ends because it's crystal. And, you know, imagine that you're looking from inside. There is not a wall, right? Maybe fish, they understand what is a fish bowl. I don't know. I may need to be a fish to find out. But... That's another matter discussion. But, you know, I'm trying to imagine, okay, I'm a fish. I'm inside of that bowl. I can see the little rocks and the sand, and maybe I have a coral or some decoration inside, and maybe I can see people surrounding me, you know. But I don't see, that's true, I don't see the limits of my bowl, right? I can feel it because if I try to go there is something that doesn't let me go there. So eventually I learn what is the space that I have to move because, you know, I'm contained in that space. The other thing that I don't see, and maybe my speculation, the fish is not aware of, is the water itself. But, you know, the fish needs the water, right? We know that because we are outside of the bowl. So we see the bowl and we see the water and obviously the fish inside of it. But from the perspective of the fish, I'm not sure if the fish is aware of the water. The fish needs the water and is swimming in the water. And the water defines also how the fish live. Therefore, the water is like culture for the fish. So we live in this water that surrounds us, that we are not always aware of. We mm-hmm. take it for granted. And sometimes the same that happened with the, you know, how would I say that? The innocent concept of community, that we don't think much about it because, you know, we take it for granted sometimes. We take for granted our culture. We don't question why we do things, not on a regular basis, unless something happened and somehow we have been forced to question the ways that we live and our culture, for sure. Obviously, for somebody that is not swimming in that cultural water, it's easier to see the difference of how their own culture, you know, because you were swimming in different waters and now you are jumping to this pond, you can see things in a different way because they are brand new to you. So they are not still in your subconsciousness. They haven't gone to the high priestess yet. So, because, you know, we need to name tarot at some point. So this is not back there yet. So you are more aware of that. It's like the children. They are aware of absolutely everything because they are being new. You know, they are just exposed to that. So for them, it's very clear that it's there. But when we were exposed over and over and over again, you know, that we get blind to different things because, you know, they are there. So we are not completely aware. So if we agree with that, at least, I would say that when you grow up in a gun culture environment, obviously guns for you are very natural, right? I don't really know because I don't know that culture. It's not part of my, that was not the pond that I was swimming in. But for me, definitely, each time that I see a gun, what I see is an object that caused harm. And yes, I completely agree that sometimes you use that to defend yourself. But the way of defending yourself is because you will be able to cause harm to whatever you think is causing harm to you. I understand that you may be, you know, thinking that that's a way of protecting you. But at least in my ignorant mind, if I want to be protected from a gunshot, maybe I will wear, a vest. A vest for me definitely is a defensive object. Because mm-hmm. it's not meant, it wasn't created to cause harm. It yeah. was created to protect. Or a helmet, you know, it was created to protect. A gun, something that shoots something, I have a problem trying to understand how that is created to protect. You can use it to protect. Mm-hmm. I get it. And, you know, some people say that, you know, good guys with guns are, you know, what is needed to supposedly get rid of a bad guy with a gun. Yeah, maybe. But we don't know how many guys are going to survive the whole thing if we apply that, you know, in a massive way. If we are going to start shooting to get rid of a problem, I don't really know what is going to happen after that. But, you know, that's my personal stand. So, because I see things that way, it also gives me, like, I'm not sure if it's, what you call that thing, like shivering, like chilling, whatever. It's time that I see a kid playing with a gun. Because that kid is being trained to look at that gun as as a toy that you can play with, something that I don't know what is the training that we are giving the kid or what is the interpretation, but, you know, it's been there. And kids, you know, children are like a sponge. They are absorbing the whole thing. And, you know, it really makes me think why 300 million people really believe that you need to have a gun when on the other side we have almost more than 6 billion people in the world that don't need it. So, but they are living, and yet problems happen all over the place. And obviously, if we are in a conflict situation, or there are wars, and there are, I get it, things happen all over the place. But the point that I see, and you mentioned it before with the article of this guy that was saying, well, what is the difference, for instance, in England, compared to the United States, why they don't need to be, you know, carrying their guns all over the place to feel secure. So that makes me think that then there are different ways of defending ourselves, or different ways of creating a sense of security. But utilizing an object that has been created to do harm, I guess that, well, maybe it's an option. I'm not going to say no, but I would keep it, like, you know, last in the list of the different options that we can go first. So I'm not saying that, oh, we need to whatever, take them and destroy them. Yeah, because I don't know, it definitely, your life and your family depends on you going to hunt something to bring food to your house. I respectfully understand that you need that thing to hunt, but don't make a mistake here. You need to hurt an animal to bring food to your family too, right? That's why you're using a gun. And then we go again, the same way that we were talking about communities and different qualities of communities. Well, we have guns and different qualities of guns. If you want a gun to defend yourself, do that really need to be a war weapon? A machine that not only was meant to kill, but it was meant to kill as fast as possible a huge number of people. So there are arguments there that obviously to me doesn't make any sense. But again, it's a conversation that this country has been having like for a long, long time. And for sure, we will need more time to have those discussions. And I get it, we will have different positions, and I respect everybody's position on this. And we can respectfully have this kind of conversation. And I'm more than willing to try to understand people that think different than me, because as I say before, it's not part of my culture, so I'm very ignorant with the culture of guns.
Can you just explain the difference? Because, like, you're talking, right, that metaphor of the fish and the fishbowl, right? Uh-huh. I am the fish who grew up in the fishbowl of America. So I don't know what you mean when you say you didn't grow up in gun culture. And what was different about your upbringing and the world that you were born into that is different? Because you have the benefit of seeing, because you're now in this country. So can you explain a little bit the difference that you're talking about?
Yeah, for instance, when I was very, very little, my brother, who was 2 years older than me, he had those cowboys, you know, plastic guns that were like, you know, very silver with white, whatever, and his hand. And he loved to play like the cowboys. And unfortunately, there was always an Indian that you were going to kill. You know, starting by that, obviously, the game is not very, was not my favorite. Let's put it that way. I prefer to play like Batman, Robin, and then, you know, try to grab the bad guys, but we were not using guns. So that was when I was very young. But I remember that growing up, I was still a girl in my country that doesn't exist anymore, Venezuela, because what remains is not the country that I grew up in. People start being very reticent to the idea of having kids playing with guns. Because, you know, it was not hard, at least for some people, to see the correlation that when you are so used to be playing with guns and to realize that guns give you a power over that other things don't give you, those things can end badly. And at the same time, there is beautiful people that even though we're playing with guns, they are not violent. So everything is possible. We are not saying that that's, you know, again, I'm against dogma, so that's not exactly the way it goes. But there was that concern. So when in my country, you were going to buy a toy gun, the toy gun was clearly a toy. And mostly it was a water gun. So they were with different things, whatever. The only similarity to a gun is that eventually you needed to pull a trigger. But that thing was not even close to a real gun. That, for instance, there. Did we have violent problems in Venezuela? Yeah, like a lot. And now even more than before. So obviously there is not a guarantee, but if you wanted to have a gun when you were an adult, you needed psychological evaluation. You needed to take a training, how to use a gun. And after you had all those things, you needed to get a license, a permit. And then it was when you were allowed to buy only a specific kind of gun that you could justify was for personal protection. So obviously the amount of gun legal ownership of guns is very limited, and also the kind of gun that you have. So, and I didn't grow up with the sense that you needed to be, you know, to have a gun in your house if somebody break into your house. And I will, you know, I challenge to people to think how many times you get break into your house that justify to have a gun. Because maybe there are areas where that is, I don't really know. You know, it's a real question. It's not rhetorical. It's a real question that I would like to know. So then I was living in Europe, and Europe is way, 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 way more strict to that. And they have had, you know, a very violent past, and not so past, but very recent, you know. Yeah, they don't really have a good relationship with guns, so they decided no more guns. And it's even harder in Europe in general to really have a gun. What I see from all this is that, you know, there is no perfect place in the world. There are benefits and not benefits. What is the contrary of benefits?
Detriments.
Exactly. In every place, you know, it's like, I somehow am happy that many people say that this is the greatest country in the world. And I would like to know in what sense, because this is a great country. I'm not going to say it's not a great country. There are many great countries in the world, and all of them have something good, something not so good. And, you know, and there are different characteristics. And a person like me, for instance, living in Europe, I was too American to be considered an European. And here, sometimes I've been considered more too European to be considered an American. So, but that's fine. I'm fine with that. But, you know, in every place there is something. And but the other thing that I see is that how then is that the most of the countries in the world can keep going without embracing, at least not from, you know, from the majority of the culture in the place, without embracing that gun culture, right? That's what I have there. And in the countries that I know and that I have visited, that by no means is the majority of the planet, but wherever I go, it's really hard to find guns for kids. And it's not that anybody is really missing them. So for me, for a person like me, to only think on the notion of having kids playing with guns, as I say before, it really gives me, you know, like the chills, like the, you don't have other toys. It's not enough all the Legos that we have or the different building blocks or dolls or cars or paintings or clay. I mean, you know how many things do you have out there for a kid to play? Do they really need to play with guns? What are we really wanting them to learn? Because remember that for kids, like for many mammals, you know, their play is their training for life. Right. It's what they are going to do when they grow up. So to think not only in playing with guns, but having kids involved in anything related to that, in my point of view, is not helping. And even less in this climate that we are now with this gun violence that is being even considered an epidemic and is an epidemic in this country. It's not a global, it's not a pandemic. It's an epidemic here. So obviously there is a lot to talk about that. And, you know, for a person like me concerned about community and about building community and also about how we can learn from our experiences so we can give to the generations that come after us, you know, the possibility of a better future, I don't see how the guns play there. But this might...
Yeah, I was thinking as I was reading that article, I was trying to come up with other analogies, like, you know, because there's a lot of research and commentary online that says kids playing with guns is good. It's actually very normal. Like, it's very common. Even if you don't introduce them, they somehow are like always making guns out of toast and carrots and whatever they're eating or doing, whatever. It's just so, it's so prevalent, which is interesting, like where that comes from.
I disagree with that. Yeah, because it's the same that they are trying to tell us that girls like pink and boys like blue, and nobody told them, well, that's not true. Well, we dress them as babies.
Right. But I can say I have some very hippie loving, non-hunting friends who were like shocked when their son started playing, you know, the cops and robbers gun thing.
Yeah.
And there might be, you know, some deeper or more mysterious reason why it's so like part of our genetic memory, right? Like it could be embedded in there in some way.
But this kid were not watching TV or interacting with other kids.
They don't have television and they're homeschooled. So it's like you couldn't get a better example of how somebody was completely kept away from the culture of the
guns.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to make some connections here related to that article that I keep mentioning, which, you know, I did not agree with the premise of the article, but there's a lot of research in the article. And it's interesting to think about the concepts that the writer shares. And one of them basically being that, at least as far as I interpreted the article, was that there is an element to this play that is necessary for males. And this is a very binary gender analysis, that it's a necessary part of the male development to have play where they can basically exercise their aggression over one another because it's part of their developmental process. And it kind of... Interestingly, it relates to, maybe I don't need to share all this, but there is a relation to how children are developed and the separation from their mother, and how for a daughter to be separated from their mother, there's still this ability to emulate the mother. But for boys, they're conditioned to be not female, basically not like your mother. So they kind of have this open source thing like, well, how do we develop? What are we supposed to do? It's anything not female, but what does that mean? And so there, it ends up being this sort of like competition of who can be stronger, have power over another. And to me, I'd just like to say that that seems like a terrible way of conditioning boys. I don't understand the author's point in that, but that was a lot of the justification for allowing them to play games where they are using weapons because it is part of their basic biological development. And I think it's interesting, Ian points out comments on the Facebook feed that all the great things in this country come at the expense of other people. And to me, that is an exercise of aggression. It's an exercise of power over somebody. And I think, unfortunately, the way I see this country is there is a lot of value put on people who have power and who have money. And there's a lot of people who want to emulate that behavior. And inherent in that is an aggressiveness. I was talking to my sister yesterday. It was interesting because she was sort of commenting that she's not aggressive at all. And maybe that's her downfall, right? Like maybe that's why she hasn't been as successful as other people. And I'm kind of just putting all these different pieces together and thinking about it. But as it relates to the gun culture, it's like some of the research that's out there that says it's really harmless might be harmless because we aren't actually studying aggressive behavior and how it relates to how we have been defining success. And as Ian points out, the great things, quote unquote, great things have come at the expense of other people. And is that really what we want to value? Is having power over somebody?
Well, and you know, even when you quoted this researcher that was somehow justifying that kind of play between boys, he was talking about a way of exercise their power over one another.
Right.
So again, you know, it ended being a political discussion.
Right.
Do we really need power over one another, or we need the power to create
together?
A togetherness. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yesterday also, when we have this conversation, I think I told you before that we have these two ladies that stopped by and were talking about the global community, that for them there was only one community. All the rest were like pieces on the same puzzle, right? So it was only one community, and that was the global community, and everybody should know what to do. And, you know, yeah, it's very idealistic. Maybe we would like to go to that utopia or something like that. I'm not sure. But obviously that's not what is happening right now. And I was asking her, so what would right now, with the state of mind that we have, it seemed that we are not very clear in what we have to do. And, you know, we are not really doing, or at least not living in that image that you are telling me about the global community. And she mentioned something that I need to start doing my research, but I'm going to share it with you too. She said, we should go, because I was asking, well, what about the leadership then? Because if we have a leadership, do we need leadership after all? And she said, well, you know what? We can be like wolves. I said, like wolves? Anyway, that's interesting. I have to look up that. And she said, you know, because in the pack of wolves in their community, they have the alpha male, right? But apparently, among all the males, they it's sort of like a democratic thing. Because the alpha male is not always the alpha male. So they take turns. So I don't know for how long is the tenure of each one of them, you know, but, and I said, well, okay, that sounds very democratic. How do they elect their alpha male? Because as far as I know, the animals sort of like a fight to be the alpha guy, right? And they are the ones that can mate the females. And then if you are the weak, you are execrated from the group. You know, it's not that democratically. And she said, look for that, and you will see, because apparently she was researching about those wolves. I have to do the homework. I haven't done it because I learned about this just yesterday. So, and when I asked her, how do they know then who is the next in line to be the alpha male? And she said that they sniff to each other. Because apparently there is something, I don't know if it's an hormone or hormones or something like that, that when it's your turn to be the alpha male, apparently you smell differently than the rest. I found that fascinating. And I told her, can you imagine if we could be like wolves and start sniffing to each other and see who smells like the leader? And then we'll say, oh, it's your turn to take them. But she told me, read about that because it's really fascinating. And, you know, I invite people, if there is anybody out there that knows about the society of the wolves, because I do know that when they decide to take care of a creature, even if it's not a wolf, they take care as a pack. So the community raised their little ones. It's not like, oh, that's your business, mom. Deal with that and whatever. No, it's the community who raised the creature. So I found it interesting. I don't know, Teresa, if you have heard anything about this sniffing leadership, because I found it fascinating.
No, that is fascinating. Definitely, yeah. Most people do not pass the sniff test that are in leadership, but that's a subject for another day. For me, the thing that feels relevant is that we don't always understand why we do certain things. Like you said earlier, right? Growing up in the fishbowl, you kind of take for granted that things have always happened a certain way. And I think that, you know, this thought came to me when I was thinking about diversity in the workplace. And when you think about hiring a CEO, you have this job description. And was that job description basically developed based upon who the last candidate was and the kind of characteristics that they had? So is that really what a CEO should be? Or are we just modeling it off of the people who have historically been the CEOs who have been perhaps more aggressive, right? I'm not making that assumption, but we have these ideals that we have in our mind. And the question is always, where did that ideal come from? We have this idea that, you know, guns, and there's a lot of people that have researched, and or I don't know how they researched this, but they have said that guns don't cause more violence. Children playing with guns, video games. But how do we ever go back to the beginning before we have this culture of acceptance of it? Because it's so there. And so
there are many questions. Yeah, there are many questions there, because, you know, sometimes we talk about aggressiveness and violence, and they may come hand in hand in many cases, but they are not exactly the same. And how we can then justify the fact that toddlers dead because of a gun in this country are like way, way, way too high, the numbers. Every year there is, you know, it's heartbreaking, the amount of kids, but mostly toddlers. Explain to me why a toddler has access to a gun. Because obviously they think it's a toy and they are playing. And how many times we come out to read on the news or know about somebody that it was an accident, they were playing, they didn't know that there was whatever, all the things, and then people saying like, you know, we need to teach everybody how to handle securely a gun. Yes, I will agree with that. But on the other hand, you know, if you don't have it at hand, if you don't have it, you know, like a kid can have access to that, obviously you want to have the accident happen. But how can we say that there is no correlation with the gun violence and the amount of gun when we look at the statistics, and the statistics are saying completely the opposite? Because they say the opposite.
Right. Well, and I guess that's the, for me, maybe the concern is that, can we all get on the same page and agree that we have a gun problem? And if we can, then are we willing to really start to explore ways of relieving ourselves of this problem? I don't know. I don't know how many
people. I don't know either. But you know what? I think that we could, in general, although generalizations are not always accurate, but we could agree that we have a problem. But I'm not sure if people is willing to also say that it's a gun problem. Because the guns advocates and the defenders of the gun culture say that the problem is not the gun. So for them, it's not a gun problem. So there is a problem. There is something that is out of control. But they don't see it as the gun. And in my point of view, is my Marilena Ferrer speculation. Yeah, because that's the water that you cannot see yet. Maybe we need to take you out of the bowl. So you can see the water, you know, one of my favorite quotes that I never remember who was the guy or the woman who said, like, listen, xenophobia and ignorance can be cured traveling and reading. When you travel and when you read and when you learn different ways of solving problems, different ways of living, then you can make different choices because you are adding more opportunities, more choices to your, you know, for whatever need you have. But if you grew up being a hammer and the only thing that you know is to hammer, you will treat everything like it's a nail. And you know what? No, there are many other things. So the more we can add to our own, you know, toolkit, I would say will help us to find different solutions. And maybe we can find different ways of defending ourselves or educating ourselves or playing with our kids and to take care of the so-called male need in boys to play with guns that with all due respect, I'm sorry, but I don't buy that.
Well, and I mean, that brings up a much larger topic. And it's not something I'm an expert on, but when, you know, you think about it, there is some correlation between mm-hmm. testosterone and aggression.
But I agree.
It's not like a linear thing, right? There's plenty of males who have testosterone who aren't aggressive. So it's a bigger subject that I can wrap my heads around without more research. But to me, the question is why as a society do we tend to accept aggressive behavior? It made me think of like in Wisconsin, when you drive mm-hmm. around, everyone observes the traffic rules. Like you don't generally pass people like... A good example would be like if you're on a highway and there's backed up traffic, you don't get into the shoulder and scoot all the way up to the front of the line there. When I moved to the East Coast, it's totally different. It was like every man for themselves, every woman for themselves. And it irritates me when I see that. And I think, why isn't that person abiding by the rules of respecting everyone else and the road rules and the fact that we're all stuck here together in this traffic jam, but they, for some reason, think that they can go ahead. And that is just like a microcosm of an experience that I've had that I don't know how to change somebody else's thinking about that. And then when you live in a society, like, not to just categorize all of the East Coast, but like in New Jersey predominantly, you'll, if one person's doing it, then everyone starts to do it, right? And then it just becomes this yeah. thing where, well, I've got to be aggressive too. If I don't do it, I'm not going to get ahead. So I understand the impulse for it. But how do we socialize people differently so that that's not the behavior? Okay, let's hear
it. I have a theory for that. And you say clearly, when you see that somebody does it and there is not consequence for that, then you say, why am I going to be abide by the laws? Because that's the other thing. Because we have been educated of being rules, not understanding that rules are there for a better life in community. But just because if you don't follow the law, you're going to be punished. And we go to the punishment of the system that, you know, is not to understand, is not to see the benefits of being following the rules. Is that you follow the rule, or there is somebody that is extorting the rules on you. So somehow, you know, we go back again to this power over instead of the power for. So there, in a culture like that, the things are imposed, or at least feel like they are imposed. The only thing that keeps somehow that fabric is the punishment. And if somebody goes completely free of consequence for something, that somehow other people take it like, oh, if such and such can do it, why cannot do the things? So I think it's a part of that. And also then we have our self-esteem like a really in bad shape in general. And, you know, I don't want to be considered the idiot because, unfortunately, talking about wolves, there is people thinking that we live in a world that you cannot be a sheep in a world of wolves. So hit first because you can have the chance to hit twice. So I guess that we have a mixture of a lot of misunderstanding. I'm so pleased that we have our... It's there. Are you there, Sheriff? You are there. This is one of my favorite guys in Ulster County. I have bias, and you know, I always talk about my bias.
So we're excited to welcome Sheriff Figuero to our conversation on gun culture.
I have to say, Sheriff, you are like Virgin Mary. Bendito tú eres entre todas las mujeres. As Teresa, you say, you are just the one exception in the program, right?
Well. Yes, yes. This is a monumental day.
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for having me. I got out, I don't know how long the show goes, but I got about 15, 20 minutes. I just wanted to stop in and just join the conversation. And it's really good to see you, María Elena. Un placer como siempre a verte.
El placer es mío. Thank you for being here. You know, Teresa and I are here trying to understand gun culture, right? You know, for me, it's hard because I was sharing before, I didn't grow up here. So I have a completely different set of cultural approaches to gun. And for me, to talk about kids playing with guns really give me like, oh, I'm not sure that that's the right thing to do. And I respect that people want to defend, you know, the right to bear arms and things like that. But, you know, if you cannot vote until you are 18 and you cannot drive until you are 16 and so many other things, how is that that to handle a killing object can be good for kids? What would be your take on this?
So I think there are different, as we all know, this is a super hot topic. mm-hmm. in particular in our country. And I think the guns and this country, remember, it was very rural back at the beginning of the founding of the country. So hunting was something that you lived by. You couldn't go to the store and like I do and pick up, you know, beef and chicken and the like. You had to go and find your and hunt and find your food. And there's still a lot of parts of the country that are like that. It's handed from generation to generation. Obviously, if there are issues like we have in the city of New York or Chicago or recently here in Kingston, you would have to revisit that and to take a look at how we can change that behavior and how weapons are used. But it really is the culture of weapons has always been part of this nation for the purposes of the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, and the founding of the nation. So the way you're brought up really plays a role on how you feel about weapons. If you're in Wyoming or out in the Midwest, where there's a lot of some of the counties are about 3 hours far. It's very, very rural. And hunting plays a really, really big role. If you were in the Marine Corps like I was at the age of 18, you learn how to use a weapon to defend our nation in conflicts when we get deployed. So there's a difference between how we utilize a weapon when it goes to target shooting and defending yourself, and that when weapons are involved in crimes. Now, going back to your original question on age, I think people should just use their common sense when it comes to age. Some would agree that you should be a certain age to handle a weapon, and I would agree to that. But I'm not going to tell, and I don't think anybody should impose their thoughts on how to raise somebody else's children. I think there's a line there that we have to be mindful and respectful of. And I think that it's a situation that there are some people that I know when I was in the Marine Corps, and they started using a weapon at the age of eight, as young as the age of eight. But that's the way they were brought up as kids. I'm not saying that's right or wrong by any means. But what I am saying is that I think we should all have personal responsibilities when you have something like a weapon, a gun, a pistol, or a rifle in your hands. There's got to be a sense of responsibility to your fellow man. And you have to be mindful and respectful of other people that don't think that you should have a weapon at the age of 8 or 9 or 10. Mm. So I think that, you know, the laws aren't that specific. My job is to uphold the law. And obviously, if there's a law that said, you know, for example, you can't buy cigarettes unless you're 21, you can't buy alcohol unless you're 21, then I would uphold that law. So the culture and guns, some people would say that when these rules and regulations are put out, it's really to protect society as a whole. It's definitely a difference when you have a weapon in the middle of the country where you're at the age of eight, learning to use it and respect the weapon, because a weapon is not a toy. How many times have we seen in an instance where an 8 or 9 year old is out shooting and got a catastrophe, a tragedy happens where the kid shoots somebody else? How many stories have we heard where a kid picks up a weapon in the house and he kills somebody in the house, or his brother, sister, or cousin? I think don't understand the respect of the weapon and the responsibility of having that weapon.
Yeah, I think that's part. Oh, sorry, Teresa. Just very quick, you know, because you mentioned that thing. Yes, kid. It's hard for a kid that is playing with a toy that looks so similar, identical to a gun. When do you have that switch in your mind that say, "Oh, it's not a toy anymore. It's a gun." I just wanted to say that, yeah, Teresa.
Well, I wanted to just say, you don't have to worry. We only have 7 minutes left in the show, so you'll be done for your next appointment. And I thank you for giving us time on very short notice. One of the things that was interesting that Maria Elena and I had talked about earlier in this conversation was this idea that the gun can be used as a tool to have power over somebody. And so for people who feel powerless, perhaps that this is like the most direct way that they can feel empowered. And so when we have a country that's having this great debate, right, about it's not the gun, it's the person, really, to me, I look at it as these systems that have been broken down. And when people don't have power, the gun is a way to give them power. And I wonder if when you deal, when you interact with community members, if you're having conversations about these types of things to better help reveal what the solutions might be.
Hmm. I think the biggest thing that we have to understand is that of communicating with each other and what it is to each of us to own. I'm a owner of weapons because I was in the Marine Corps, did 25 years in the state police, and obviously I'm the sheriff. I'm public safety is my job. But I think that the important thing is communicating why you feel the way you feel and why it's important to have certain parameters in place for the protection of the people in our community. For example, a background check. Training, required training if you're going to buy a weapon. The biggest issue that we have facing us right here in the city of Kingston and really in the bigger cities throughout the country is not necessarily the law-abiding citizens, but it's that criminal element and gangs that they do what's called straw purchases. That means they get somebody else that has no record to buy the weapons, then they bring them back, and then they report them stolen. But in reality, what they did is they sold it to somebody on the street. And then that's how we get such an uptick in crime. It really is a hot topic. But I think that, for example, some people would say, and I've been to a lot of these conversations, is if the folks that are weapon, if you will, probably never held a weapon at the age of 10 to 12. And that's you grow up with that. It's like driving a car for some of them. Really, I mean, that's really the problem comes in when we don't respect what a gun is and does and the harm that it causes in humanity. That's the issue that we all have to talk about, is how it harms people. And you're right, it does give certain individuals a sense of entitlement and power because they own a weapon. But if you do something wrong with it, we need to hold people accountable. If we don't hold people accountable, then we're going to continue to have the uptick in violence involving guns. Our country, I think, is the number one country in the world when it comes to owning guns. And it's eye-opening. You look at Australia, they banned ownership of weapons, and all of a sudden they didn't have any shootings.
Yeah.
Their shootings went down. So it's quite evident that certain things that come in play with gun ownership are extremely important. And that is, if we want to have weapons, then we have to make sure that the weapons are owned by people who are going to use them for the right reasons, not to commit crimes.
Well, I just want to thank you again, Sheriff, for giving us your time, for being the first inaugural official male guest on I Want What She Has.
Does that include the president that's sitting behind me there? Because I have a photo of President Abe Lincoln in the back.
We can see it. We can see it. Yeah, that's great. No, thank you. I mean, I don't know if we can continue the conversation. I would like to continue talking about this with you, Sheriff, because we were talking about that, you know, that you have to make sure that the law is applied, enforced, whatever, we have to talk about that. But definitely, I completely agree with the training. We were talking about that, you know, other countries, if you want to have a gun, you need to do a training first. And that's, maybe we don't need to do that thing, but I think it's important to talk with the community about, you know, I'm going to be completely in agreement with that. Let's talk about that. Let's put all our ideas together and let's hear to each other, because I really want to hear, as we say before, I want to hear what other people think about this.
Yeah, it's a, like I said, a hot topic, always is. The minute and people get concerned when you start talking about putting rules and regulations, because the folks that really adhere to it are your people that are you know, they're going to abide by the law. The people that we need to worry about, the ones that are breaking the laws.
That they are breaking.
How do we stop them from having weapons? Tragedies always happen. Of course, you know, we're talking about weapons of war. Nobody wants to see weapons of wars on the streets. Nobody.
Well,
exactly.
We've run out of time. Look at that.
Thank you.
Of course, thank you, Maria Elena, for joining again. Maria Elena will be back next month, the second Monday of the month, for our always lively conversations. Thanks to Ian for running the dials back at Radio Kingston. Ida's coming up next with the Heavy Light Show. And that's the show. Until next week, love yourself.
Perfect.
And lift one another.
Take care.